All right, welcome to the podcast. I'm Richard McClain.
I'm Pat Burnside.
And this is Please Leave a Message. What you been up to?
Just working, getting ready for Sundance.
Oh yeah, that is coming right up.
A little scary for me.
You said you get really busy at Sundance.
So mostly it's because of the traffic and all the people in such a small town. I mean, the population doubles, triples with all these people that are here to see films, and they're just in the way.
That makes sense.
But, you know, it's a fun time. It's just kind of cool to see it all is. The people.
And have you ever gone to any of the films?
Or? I have. I've done that.
I've gone to a few. I know this guy that's a good friend of mine, and he is a Sundance junkie. So he gets in on the locals-only lottery.
Nice.
He pays the $800 for the gets-me-into-whatever-I-want-to ticket, and he'll see about 30 films.
Oh my gosh. So when I first started going, I went just to see the ASCAP Cafe to see the bands play.
Oh, okay, right.
So I saw bands like the Old 97s and Duncan Sheik, all before they were really big. And it was like watching them in a small cafe, and it was just the coolest thing.
Very cool.
So yeah, it's fun stuff.
So we like to wish our
special guests. Or special listeners.
Or listeners a happy birthday. So let's see what birthday song we can pull out this week.
Happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Charlie. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Charlie. Happy birthday to you.
That was beautiful.
That was by NNE.
I wish I was Charlie.
And it's just called Happy Birthday.
Do we acknowledge that we left the room?
Oh, no. I just cut it off.
Guess there's no tape cutting anymore, so it's super easy.
Oh, yeah. I have a tape cutting block, though.
Look at you! You been doing any of that then, or did you just get it so you could?
I've got it because it came with... I bought a kit for repairing 8-tracks.
Okay.
And it was part of that kit.
I heard about your 8-track blow-up.
Oh my gosh. I still haven't fixed it. It's still backwards.
Oh,
which is sad because it's a really cool one.
Yeah.
And all I need to do is flip it around, because most of them, that's the only problem with them.
Yeah.
That the glue gets weak on the tape. You just fix that and they're good to go for another 30 years before they fall apart again.
Do you remember when Starbound had that huge section of 8-tracks?
I don't.
It was like, there was the main building that they turned into the appliance store.
Right.
But then you'd walk through a back wall, like they'd cut open, and it was like this, I don't know if it was a container or something, or...
Oh, like a shipping container?
Yeah, but you were going to this other room, and it was just full of 8-tracks.
Huh.
And some of them were brand new. I mean, never been opened, never been listened to. It was cool.
That is cool.
That was my favorite record store for years.
Starbound was fun to go to. Yeah.
Matt still sells stuff online now.
Does he?
I think it's Starbound Online or something like that.
Oh, he's sold a lot of his stuff to other people.
Yeah.
Like in big bulk stuff.
Big
bulk stuff, because... There was a record store in Taylorsville that I would go to, and they basically took what they bought from him and opened up a record store.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like just about everything in there still had the Starbound labels on.
Oh, my gosh.
I still buy stuff at Randy's sometimes that has Starbound labels on it.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, I bought a record from, like, back east somewhere.
Uh-huh. And it said Starbound.
And it had a Starbound sticker on it when it came to me.
Whoa. Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, just some used one I was looking for, and I'm like, oh, there's a decent copy. I bought it. I open up, and it's got the yellow tag on it.
It was so hard to get him to like you sometimes, though.
Oh,
I mean, he was super nice, but you could never get him to, like, come be in my store with me.
Yeah. He actually lived in my state growing up.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so my parents knew him. I didn't really know him.
Yeah.
I just knew who he was.
I knew him a little bit from going to the store, but then I figured out that it was Joni's dad.
Okay.
So then I knew him a little better.
Gotcha.
But still, it was still, yeah, come to the store. buy stuff, but that was, it was right. It was always kind of...
Well, and that was the other thing. Like, he had a certain value or level of value for them,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't really want to lower his prices on that.
Exactly.
And so that's, he just kept building up stock yeah. and not selling it. And that's yeah. why he had to go out of business.
Exactly. I mean, and he filled up that second store, and I don't think anyone hardly ever came into it.
Yeah.
That was sad because yeah. he took over that Comics Utah location.
Yeah. But I went there once.
Yeah.
I bought my very first set of dice there.
Really?
Yeah.
I think I bought my first set of dice at that Comics Utah as well. I know I bought a bunch of comics there and a bunch of Rifts books.
I have the new Rifts.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How is it?
It's pretty cool.
Oh my gosh. The art's much better. Oh, yeah. That's an old... That's an old one, though.
They've got kind of a mix of new and old stuff in it.
Some people really, really love Palladium, and then there's people that just think he's the worst.
Yeah.
And I started on him, so I love him, but I do see the limits of it.
It's very crunchy.
Super crunchy.
Yeah.
But I can still do all of it. I could build a Rifts character or a Heroes Unlimited character without the book still.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's so bad.
I played a Rifts game when I first moved down here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I saw a guy online. He's like, hey, I'm trying to get a gaming group together. And I was like, Rifts. I don't know who to play with because we just moved down here. And it's like, well, yeah, we meet at the game store on Thursdays. And so I showed up and they're like, okay, we're going to do a Rifts game. Like, all right, I've heard of it, but I've never played it.
I don't have time for making this.
So they kind of walked me through a lot of it. And
that's cool.
So
this is better quality books than they've ever done.
I like the size that they've finally settled on. I don't think I can buy any more Savage Worlds stuff.
I think you've probably got everything you need.
I think there's one left that if they did it, I would probably
buy. What would that be?
It's one of their earlier settings, and they've been saying that they were going to do...
It's kind of like a gothic horror one, right?
I think so, yeah.
It's the whole world's evil, and you're the only... Is that the one?
It's a fantasy gothic horror kind of a thing. It's post-apocalyptic in a fantasy world. The sun went out or
right.
something. And then...
I remember looking at that one thinking it would be a cool one.
So I think if they did that one, I would probably pick it up because I've got all of their other like original settings that they came out with. And then it's gotten so popular that I can't even keep up with it. I used to just buy everything because it was easy to.
And not anymore.
Now I have to be picky. I am still waiting on one more.
What's that?
It's the last Deadlands Reloaded plot point campaign.
Yeah.
So it's funny that we were talking about 8-tracks because I decided to play a little bit of this movie.
And what movie is that?
So there's this movie, it's called So Wrong They're Right.
What?
It's a documentary about people that can't let go of 8-tracks.
Oh my.
It's from the late 90s.
Being an owner of a home audio store myself, I find that a lot of the customers are rather backward oriented, maybe being driven by marketing influences. Many times people will come in and say, well, everything's on CD today. You can't get nothing on other formats, record or 8-track. And they just don't seem to have any use for them. Yes, it's true, you can get a lot of re-releases on CD, but you would never be able to get everything. And some people would go cold turkey and just abandon these other formats. And the reality is this is backwards. I mean, what should be the most important is listening to the music you want to hear.
I remember one time we were in the studio and we were recording. And, you know, it was a fairly contemporary studio. But we had a 16-track tape machine, and we felt that we were getting good sounds, but we put them on a cassette, and they just didn't sound like anything that we'd ever heard on a record before. So we brought in an 8-track machine of mine that records, and we dubbed some of our tunes down to 8-track, and then we brought them out, and we played them on various machines in the lobby. And that was one way of kind of validating the mix to see if it sounded like something that you'd recognized before that had a sound of real music, which seems to so often be lacking from some of the recordings that they make in the studio these days.
The whole point of format surfing is to get beyond the format to really make them transparent, to get at the pure music itself.
And every time you play an 8-track, you know, the tape gets a little bit hazier, a little bit fuzzier, and you never know, is this the last time I'm going to hear this? So to sort of this process, this transfer going on between the 8-track and your memory, You know, it's almost like the music is physically going from the tape into your head, and you can play that loop over and over in your head.
It's a clear 8-track. You can see inside of it, and so you can sort of see what goes on when one plays an 8-track. And so this is one of my favorites, even though it does not play, it's broken. But you can, I guess, see what a broken 8-track looks like.
I found a copy of 8-track Mind without even thumbing through it. I just bought it because I'd acquired these 8-tracks. And then I kind of realized that, you know, maybe now, after reading it home, taking it home on the L and reading it, maybe now would be the time to get the player. Reading through the pages, I also saw that, you know, 8-tracks were kind of more of a lifestyle, that it wasn't just merely, you know, acquiring these things and pushing them into a player. It kind of showed me that there were other people out there with similar interests, kind of a cartridge family, if you will.
This machine comes with me in the shower. It's really wonderful. You know, it plays and plays and plays, and the only time I ever have problems with it is when the batteries are running out. It's never broken a tape. I mean, it's split a tape at the splice, but it's never, like, eaten a tape. Its twin has definitely eaten a number of tapes. But this is the machine I wanted when I was a little kid, and my parents, they were so unhip that we didn't have an 8-track player at all. And I had these cousins who had a pickup truck with an 8-track player in it, and I thought it was the neatest thing on earth. I really liked the big ka-chunk sounds it would make when it would flip over. So when I saw this machine, I knew I had to have it.
I first bought a Panasonic player at a thrift store on Lincoln Avenue for $10 and got that home, and it only played track 3. So I decided that wasn't good enough, and I negotiated with the guy to let me try some more players so I could find one that works. And then once it plugged in, I realized the magic of 8-track. I heard the clunking sounds. I had the tapes breaking.
It was one of those small box Panasonics, and I got it home, hooked it up. It played beautifully, 20 tapes. I tried all these new tapes. I was so excited. I put in Double Platinum by Kiss, and it played about half the song, and then it almost exploded. I mean, there was this horrible noise, like a screech, and then the machine just stopped dead, and I pulled the tape out, and you could see the tape in the cassette still, and it had been ripped in half, literally.
One of my favorite 8-tracks is just called Disco Chicago by DJ Jay Novak. It was recorded in January 20th of 1978. I found this at a thrift store near Wrigley Field, and it's just an incredible tape. The sound quality rivals any of my KTEL or other disco ones. It just leads me to this curiosity, or almost like a voyeurism, of what this individual chose to put on this tape. When was this tape used? How many disco parties was it at? And then why all of a sudden did they decide to discard it?
One of the advantages that 8-track had over the cassette, which really caught my eye, or ear, you could say, back then, was the fact that it was pretty much running parallel with quadraphonic sound.
This is the Black Motion Picture Experience. It's quadraphonic. I, of course, don't have a quadraphonic player, but I suppose it sounds really good on quad. It sounds pretty good on stereo as well. It's got a number of hits on it. It's very, very, very mellow. It's kind of like Barry White meets Curtis Mayfield.
You may or may not have heard about this. It was called the L cassette. It was brought out basically in the late 70s, and the idea behind it was very good. Basically, what they did was take all the good points of your 8-track and cassette and put it into a new format at that time called the L cassette. Runs at 3 3/4 IPS, uses a quarter inch tape, is 4 tracks, 2 tracks in each direction. So this is actually the only format I can say sounded like, honest to God, reel to reel. Unfortunately, this was basically audiophile type format which was coming out, and many of the manufacturers had banded together at its introduction to show their distaste in the format, because they felt that there was too many formats on the market at the time and they didn't need an additional format, which was very unfortunate.
Berlin, which was another mystery to me. And I got it, and of course was depressed for about a month. And
in high school. I listened to almost nothing else but Berlin. I just walked around with this kind of shattered, mopey look on my face all the time. And of course, it goes on this endless loop, so you can get depressed all over again from the beginning. But later I heard it at a friend's house. I think maybe I bought the LP, I don't remember. And something sounded strange. So I went back and I checked on the 8-track, and in between Berlin and Lady Day, the first two tracks, there's about 30 seconds of incidental music on there that is not on the LP.
I was in a bar one night in Bucktown, and throughout the course of the evening, I met this young lady who would later become my regular girlfriend. And throughout the course of the night, we hit it off rather well, and it came time to leave. And I was going to offer a ride home, but then I realized that I had 8-tracks all over my dashboard, and I didn't want to kind of blow this chance. So I kind of hemmed and hawed, and then we decided, well, okay, we'll have it there. And I said, well, maybe it's dark out, and the car was under street light. Maybe she wouldn't notice the 8-tracks. I'm kind of guilty now that I felt ashamed about it. And she was kind of nervous about getting in the car with someone she didn't know. But then when she saw the 8-tracks on the dashboard, she immediately started laughing. And it really did kind of put her at ease in a way. She thought that if anyone would put 8-tracks on, that they couldn't be all bad.
And the whole documentary is like that.
Wow. I don't know. It sounds interesting.
It is. It is.
I'd watch it.
It's fun to watch.
Yeah, we had one. An 8-track player, just like this one, where you hit the plunger on the top, goes to the next one. You can never get it right, but
right.
It was fun. They're kind of cool. I think we busted it, though. Hitting it, like, you know, and pretending it was the to set off the dynamo.
Right, of course you would.
Yeah, that's what it looks like as a kid.
That was just the quadraphonic girl cracked me up. She's just like, this isn't quadraphonic. I don't have a quadraphonic player, of course. But
it probably sounds great because it sounds great in stereo.
Well, what's funny is because of the way that they play, when she was listening to it, she was listening to the front speaker mix and then the back speaker mix when she was listening to the same songs. It just kind of blows my mind. So, yeah, 8-tracks. You and I have known each other since high school.
High school. Art classes, right?
Yeah, that's funny because the last guys I had on, that's how I mean, since junior high.
Yeah.
But we weren't like close friends or anything.
No, we just, I think we had art together and that was it.
I think that was it.
And I didn't really run with your crowd and right. You didn't run, I didn't really run with any crowd or guests really, but sort of, I don't know.
I kind of know some of the people, like I recognize his names. And I'm like, ah.
Well, and I recognize all the names of the people you're friends with, and right. My wife was friends with all of you guys.
Right.
So that was, you know, that's kind of how that works, too.
I went on a date with your wife.
Hey, don't say that.
Just one.
You know, before we were married, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's, I feel more comfortable now.
Long before.
I knew that, actually. It's all good.
In fact, I collected Supergirl comics for her while she was on her mission.
We still have them. We have an attic full of comics now. I've stopped collecting, probably 3 months ago. Because it just got too much. They're too expensive and I wasn't reading them as much.
I stopped reading a long time ago. I stopped reading it was when they were doing the death of Clark Kent.
Oh, wow.
So it was a long time ago that I stopped reading.
Wow.
And I'll pick up a trade paperback.
Yeah, that's how I read them now.
And most of those I get at the library.
That's the way to do it. I love Comixology. I buy stuff from there every once in a while now because it's easier. It doesn't clutter my house because I collect whatever I can get. So I don't need more physical things of any sort. So the digital ones work good. And if you can get them on sale, it's wonderful.
Are you excited about the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2?
It looks funny.
I'm looking at your baby Groot up here.
Oh, yeah.
About how funny.
So that was a guy that sat across from me at my first Comic-Con. That's the fun thing is afterwards, all the artists trade stuff.
Yeah.
And so that's where a lot of this stuff in this room came from.
Well, isn't that more what it's about, though? Kind of building the community.
It is for me. That's why I decided to do it, because when I was going to the Comic Cons, I was spending all my time in Artist Alley. I was talking to all the artists, and I was like, well, I was thinking about doing it, and they're all like, you should do it. You should totally do it. And so I'm like, okay, I'll do it. But yeah, they have down here on Fridays at the mall, they have a Friday sketch club, and it's like local artists from this area all convene. And
oh, that's cool.
It's really cool, because there's some pretty well-known guys that show up.
A couple of police sketch artists come as well, make sure that their skills are still polished.
I saw a video online that was police sketch artists that were like horrible at what they do. Like just flat out horrible. Like you look at the thing and you're like, you're never going to catch the guy if that's the picture you're looking
at. Nobody looks like this.
Nobody looks like this. And so Jess had actually toyed with doing bad police sketches at one of the comic jams. It just is a funny idea.
That would be fun. So is it a theme every time or just every once in a while?
Once in a while we do a theme. Like tonight's, we just did a pretty basic one. Just we got into groups. He gave us 4 minutes for a panel. And so you draw a panel, pass it, draw a panel, pass, draw a panel, pass. And so you start a story and you have no idea where it's going to go.
Wow.
And you don't have very long to draw, so nobody draws good, and it's just fun.
It'd be fun to watch. I'll check it out sometime.
Yeah, it's fun. He does it once a month on Wednesdays at the Dragon's Keep. He moved it to Orem, so we weren't sure if people were going to get lost, because it's typically been in Provo. But he moved, and so he lives closer to the Orem one now.
Yeah.
So that was our first time at that location. I liked it there. It seemed a little less cramped.
I've never even been in there, but I've always wanted to go there. It was one of the first game stores I remember seeing, thinking, oh, nerds are hiding in there. That'd be neat to go into, but
yeah.
I've never been down.
So they've got three locations. They've got one in Lehigh, They've got one in Orem, and they've got one in Provo. The Orem one's fun because it's a comic book / game store / pizza parlor.
Ooh. Hey.
/ I think they've got Mexican food too.
Don't touch the comics after you have your greasy pizza.
Right. But yeah, that's fun. I bought a game there this week.
Yeah?
I haven't bought a game in a while, and I was just itching to buy one.
And what game did you buy?
I bought an expansion for Betrayal at House on the Hill.
Ooh.
So 50 more scenarios and some more extra rooms.
That's cool. That's
played
a
that
good,
game?
I played that game. I like that one.
I like that game a lot. And I've played it many times, and I've only repeated a scenario once.
Yeah?
And it's got a mechanic for that. You don't have to play a scenario if you've already played it. But I was the only one.
So it's
so I let it go.
Yeah.
I knew nobody else had played that scenario.
Wow.
I really enjoy that game a lot.
You haven't been playing much games then.
I haven't. I've been so
holidays
other things and holidays.
Work and life.
Last game day I had was I did a Savage Worlds. Were you at that one?
Was it the Pine Box?
Yes.
Yes, I was there.
That's right, you were. I thought so.
Yeah.
That one was fun.
It was fun.
That one was really fun. I really love the way Savage Worlds does their one sheet stuff, because that's all that was. That was a one sheet, and I threw in some stuff from another one, just in case I needed
it. Yeah.
I had prepared two of them, and then I gave you the hook, and you didn't take that one, so I sent you on the other one.
That's the first time I'd played in probably a year. So it was fun. It was fun to get out and do it.
Yeah.
But I felt a little rusty.
Joshua was fun to play with because his mind just goes
He's all over the place. Yeah.
Yeah. He will think of things that nobody will think of.
I noticed that.
And so I find that's really fun to play with, is somebody that'll do that. I try to do it. Like there was this group that I would play Dungeons and Dragons with occasionally. In fact, it was the first people that ever invited me to play.
Uh-huh.
And I played with them the first time I played with them. And I had a really fun time because I'd never played before. And then after playing with them, I met somebody at work and I played with them, and I realized how stuffy and weird that first group was. They were like, they counted arrows at the end of every encounter.
And oh my.
Yeah, they weren't terribly creative. Like the rogue was always the very stereotypical rogue, and you know, everybody had their role to play the way that you're supposed to play, and they didn't realize they were doing this,
right?
Because I think they're the only people they've ever played with. But yeah, after playing with somebody else and then trying to play with them, and I was always trying to come up with, like, I played very creatively. Like I created characters that weren't very powerful on purpose, like I,
because it's a clever idea and
yeah,
it's kind of a
yeah.
character, and
so I played a monk gnome. You know, and so monks are really powerful, but because I was a gnome, I had all these negatives.
It countered
all of it. And so all of the really strong powers that I had did hardly any damage at all. And so I just had to be like the comic relief character.
Sometimes that's the funnest way.
Well,
to play,
it was.
Though.
I would be the first one into every battle. I would just run in and just like, ah! But then I would get beaten. And so I would literally run away screaming like a little girl kind of stuff. I had fun doing that, but I got this vibe from them that they were just like,
well, you're not getting the campaign done. You're not moving forward. You're not progressing. You're having fun. I mean, they're having fun too, but they know what they have their way of playing and then they
right.
know what they're doing.
Right. And I just like, I had a friend that also played with them occasionally. And he was having the same thing. Like, he's a power gamer. Like, he can work the numbers. He
min-maxes everything.
He can min-max like crazy. And he was doing that, but even he was bored doing that with them.
Wow.
And so he was trying to come up with like crazy and creative things to do. And he was saying stuff, and they're like, well, no, you can't do that. What's the fun in playing this game if you can't just come up with crazy things?
Well, they're having fun getting together, I think.
I think that's what it is. Most of them are family, and it was just... Yeah. And they've been playing together for like 20 years or something.
When we were kids, we'd play Heroes Unlimited.
Okay.
And I don't think we ever progressed past level one. It was really just about getting together and playing, and you'd do the adventure, and then you'd end up talking, and you'd get lost, and you didn't like the character, so you weren't attached to it, so you'd roll up a new one next week and start over. I didn't realize how much fun it is to play further along and have a character actually advance and get into it.
That's fun, too, but it's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
I did that. We did the Flood.
Yeah.
And played that campaign for a year.
I came to some of those.
You came to on more than some other people did.
Well, that's the hard thing about gaming.
Yeah, it is. So the interview is with Jason Noel and Matthew Skaggs. So I met Jason at school in the audio classes, and Matt Skaggs has a band called The Cold Year, and Jason produced the album that they just came out with called Praise the Goat. Well, thanks for coming down, guys. Really appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Just get started. Tell us your name and what you do.
My name is Jason Noel. I run a little audio business called H2 Audio, mainly live sound. So I do a lot of live shows as an audio engineer, but I do recording and production as well. That's a lot of fun for me.
My name is Matthew Skaggs, and I'm his drug dealer. Doesn't like to go anywhere without me.
It's very stressful work, audio engineering.
Yeah, very stressful.
I also have twin girls, and, you know, they're 10 months old, yeah, so that's, yeah. And you know, the drugs help there.
And a redheaded wife.
Yeah.
It's a lot of marijuana. A lot of doobie rolling. But for real, my name is Matthew Skaggs, and besides selling drugs to Jason Noel, I am a full-time musician, and I currently teach music, guitar and such, and I am trying to get into the studio, to the session game. I've done some session works for some local artists, and I'm in a band called The Cold Year.
Awesome. All right, well, tell us your earliest memory.
One that comes to mind, I think I was like 2 or 3, honestly. And it was back when Chuck E. Cheese was still Showbiz Pizza.
Okay.
And it was my birthday party. That's what I remember. I remember going to Chuck E. Cheese. It's December, so, you know, it's dark. And I remember it being dark outside. And we went to Showbiz Pizza, and we had a great time. If I think back, that's as far back as I can remember. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Man, that's such a hard question, because I don't even, like, I don't know how old I was. I just, when I think about it, like, it's like, very vague, and I remember it being very long, a long, long time ago. Basically, I remember watching a movie with my brother, and it was Song Remains the Same, the Led Zeppelin movie. And it was the scene when Robert Plant is sword fighting in the castle, and I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. And at that time, I wasn't super into music because I was very young. But the fact that he was sword fighting was just like the coolest thing to me, because I loved Star Wars and all that stuff. So that, I remember that, and then it wasn't until many years later when I watched The Song Remains the Same and I saw that part, and I just immediately was like, oh my gosh, this is from when I was really, really, really young. And
those moments come back to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. And I think, like, honestly, like, thinking back, I think that's probably my youngest memory, because I just remember, like, it's very vague, but when I watched that movie and saw that scene, it hit me like a ton of bricks. So,
In reality, that was like a few months ago. Matt has trouble remembering last week.
Where are we? Who are you?
All right. Well, tell us another story from your childhood. Something that's been highly influential in your life. Maybe something that you haven't shared very often.
We'll let Matt go first. I need to think about this.
The thing is, I'm kind of an open book. So one thing that I don't tell a lot of people, but is still very highly influential, is I, when I was younger, I actually got to record harmonica for my brother's band in the studio, in a professional studio here in Utah. And I couldn't have been... I was young. I moved here when I was probably... I don't even remember how old I was, but I was young. I was still in, like, I was probably in middle school, so around that age. And I remember we went into the studio, and it was, like, the coolest thing I've ever seen, because there's, like, carpets on the wall, and the guy had candles lit, and he had this huge computer system, and it was really nice, and I'd never seen anything like that. And this was kind of the same moment when I was getting into, good music. You know, I was actually paying attention to artists and songs and albums, and I had kind of inherited my brother's CD collection. And so I got to actually sit in the booth and record harmonica for this song. The band is called The Vibrant Sound, and the song is called Westport Heights, I believe, from their album Downtown. And I just remember that was, like, the coolest experience of my life, because, like, getting to sit in that booth and, like, play harmonica, and they were all digging on it. And I remember I was so nervous because I practiced for hours and hours every single day leading up to that. And so when I got in, you know, I was super nervous, and so I kept messing up, and they were just like, no, it's fine, this is normal, it's normal. And then finally I nailed it, and then the guy mixed it, did some EQing and mixing and mastering on it right there and then, and that was just the coolest thing. Like, thinking about it right now, I'm getting a little choked up. So, like, it was just the coolest thing I'd ever seen. And so it was kind of from that day on, I was like, oh, I'm gonna be a musician. Like, that's it. That is it. I'm gonna spend the rest of my life being miserable and poor just so I have a chance to make some to get a sit in a cool studio for an hour a week and make some cool music, you know? And it, that was hugely influential. I have another.
And then he got into the studio and realized that this sucks.
I got into a studio with Jason Knoll. And then I was like, oh, this is terrible. I have another one, but honestly, Jason should probably go
next. I don't know. Maybe you should tell it. Maybe I should go first. That was well, much better than mine.
the next one, I'll keep it short. They had a music festival in Southern Utah called V-Tunes. And Joshua James and Corey Mon and the Starlight Gospel got to play. And Corey Mon and the Starlight Gospel was one of the bands that my brother played in. So Corey asked me if I wanted to play harmonica for them on stage. And I was like, yeah. So I did. And it was the first time I'd ever been on stage with a real band. And, like, me and the guitarist sat down, and we wrote a part together. And that was super cool because we got to collaborate. And he was like, what if you did this and I did this? And it was super sweet. And, like, and then I got to, like, we got to stay on a houseboat that whole week, like, for free. And the people of the little town that was holding it were super nice to us and were feeding us. And then Joshua James came down, which at the time was kind of a big deal because he had just come off his recording of Build Me This, I believe, which was like his big, big album that came out that around that time. And so I got to actually sit down and talk to Joshua James, and he was super nice and was giving me all sorts of advice and saying that I was a good harmonica player. And, you know, and that was just like, ooh, so... It's all been downhill since.
So I can think of, I mean, just because we're talking about music and we're talking about appreciation for it, I can attribute my career choices in life to probably three or four people. And you guys know one of them, Mike Wisland. He's one of them. But he's probably the most recent. Before that, probably the most early, was a man named Mr. Pullum. And I think it was Mark Pullum. He worked at the Orem Library for a long time, but he was my fifth grade teacher. Fourth grade teacher. We would move around fourth grade to different subjects with different teachers in the school. Right. And he was the music and humanities and stuff like that. He made us sing, like, The King and I and stuff like that. You know, things that are just kind of silly, you know, not really anything that I would probably listen to nowadays.
Not real music.
Yeah, not real music, no.
They're not the Beatles.
It's fantastic music, don't get me wrong. But my point being that I don't know what happened or how he did it, but he taught it in such a way that it made me, like, perk up. It made me listen to what I was hearing. And just suddenly I realized that I really like this. This is fun. This is interesting. And I've never been a great musician. I've been in choirs for years and years. But, you know, I took guitar lessons for 9 months and quit. And I've never aspired to be a great musician.
But at the same time, you are a great musician because you have a great ear for it. And when it comes to, like, composing and ideas and stuff, you are.
And that's where it comes from, is him. And then my choir teacher in junior high, Mr. Blackburn, was very, very eccentric. Not a lot of people like him. and he'll be the first to admit it. He knows it. I loved him. I couldn't get enough of him. I thought he was the most genius person I've ever met. And he opened up my mind to the idea that there is more to life than just working a job. That there's something to be said and that there's an importance behind music and art. Yeah. And that it's more than just entertainment, that it's something that can be from your soul. Mm. And that idea kind of fueled my foray into, you know, attempting music and realizing I wasn't any great at it. But then finding my niche, which is using science to create art, which is what I love about audio, is that I can take these scientific theories and put them into practice in a way that makes something beautiful. There's other people as well that have influenced that, but those are the main people.
Share with us a piece of music that's been highly influential in your life.
Oh, Matt, go first there, too.
And some people get hung up on this one, thinking that I'm...
My hops. Fergie. Definitely the song that got me into music. I think. Yeah, no, that's my earliest memory, actually, yeah. No, Oh, that's so hard. That is such a hard question because there's a couple answers for it. You know?
Well, that's the thing. Like, when I came up with that, I knew that people would have multiple ones from different parts of their life.
Like,
but I'm just asking. Just share one piece.
Okay, so one influential song in my life is the song Nakamura by Hiatus Coyote. Very influential band because they showed me, they're the reason I'm into jazz, basically. Like, okay. I heard the song Nakamura on KRCL, the local radio station, and the song immediately perked me up. I heard it and I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So I pulled over and I went on to KRCL and I found the song in the playlist and I immediately went and bought the album. And the whole album was just incredible because it combines funk, jazz, hip-hop. It just combines every genre that I was really kind of discovering at the time. And that's... honestly, The Cold Year is kind of me trying to be a more rock-centric Hiatus Coyote. And I'm failing at it. But at the same time, because I'm failing at it, I'm also creating my own kind of genre myself.
It's good that you're failing at it.
Yeah, because it's jazz, but it's rock, and it's also funk, and it's also blues, and it's also 70s, like, R&B, but it's my version because I'm white, and, you know... I'm white and not very good at guitar.
Y'all don't know what it's like being male, middle class, and white.
Exactly. Yeah. And not very good at guitar. So I
think Ben Folds missed that part.
Yeah, I basically took all of those things and I tried to my best to create a more rock and roll Hiatus Coyote, and I'm failing at it, but I'm happy that I'm failing at it because a big part of my musical philosophy is that I don't like bands that try to be like other bands. I want to be a genre into ourselves. When people say, oh, they sound like the Beatles, I want people to eventually say, oh, they sound like The Cold Year. The Cold Year has this style that's very specific, you know? So that song is hugely influential. I remember that day. I was literally driving to work and it happened and it was a really crappy, rainy day. And I was literally on I-15 and I pulled off at that exit and went and looked it up and bought the album right then and there. And then I listened to it, and then I went to work, and then after work I listened to it like 4 times on repeat, that album. So, Nakamura by Hiatus Coyote.
So here's the thing: is I can't point to one. My parents, my father is not he's not a singer, he's not a musician, he's not anything of the above, he's not an artistic person, but he raised me on oldies. And the thing that he did that was different from just raising me on his music was that he would talk about the music. every time a song would come on, he'd be like, oh yeah, so this is the band, and you know, this band formed with these people, yeah. and then they lost this guy, and they got this guy instead, and they changed their name from Jefferson Airplane to Jefferson Spaceship, and on, on. You know, he told me all these stories about it, and it kind of...
Just, they wrote the worst song in the world. Yeah. We built this city. But that's opinion, sorry.
No, but I don't know, he would always talk about music in such a way that, I don't know, it gave me a love for knowing about music, for understanding it. And then my mother was an artistic person, and so she gave me the love of the music itself. Growing up on oldies, and then when I was in high school, or probably junior high, in the 90s, I heard, Save Tonight by Eagle Eye Cherry. One of the most iconic 90s alternative songs, like just, you know, straightforward. But I heard that song and I went, this isn't like the music that I listen to. What's this? This is different. And that song made me realize that there's other radio stations on the dial besides oldies. And so I listened to that song and then I started listening to other bands like Semisonic.
Smash Mouth. And,
well, Smash Mouth was later. first album I ever owned was Collective Soul, Discipline Breakdown, and Blues Traveler 4 were the two albums that I bought. Because my mom took me to Media Play and said, okay, you know, now that you've discovered other music, go for it. And so, oh, cool. So I started listening and it just, I don't know, it influenced kind of my whole taste in music from that point forward. But
so,
well, it's good that we have an answer.
Talk about the time you heard All Star on Shrek and became a...
I liked Smash Mouth way before Shrek.
I liked Smash Mouth before they were cool.
I did, actually.
I'm tweeting that. Like, was Smash Mouth ever cool? I don't know. Whatever.
So share with us a piece of media that's been highly influential in your life. This could be another song, a movie, cartoon, comic book, painting, game, radio show, another piece of, or like a play or a musical.
Well, there's this podcast. Okay.
As you can see, media is very influential.
Yeah.
You think?
To me.
So I know mine because I remember it very vividly, and it's definitely, it's kind of weird though. So I remember we were in Abilene, Texas on vacation.
He's much better at storytelling than I am.
Living on a beach house.
I actually know where Abilene is.
Yeah, and there's an area that's right on the coast, and you can get like a beach house, and we rented one, and I was up late watching Jimmy Fallon, and Neil Young and Jack White were on, and they brought their recording booth, the little portable recording booth that they have at Third Man, that you can go in and record a song, and it presses it right there for you, and you can buy your record, like your single. And I remember Neil Young got in there, he played Crazy by Willie Nelson. And because the booth is very old, it's an antique, it has that vintage sound to it, you know, like the tape warble and the imperfect, the popping and the scratching, you know. And that mixed with Neil Young's voice and Willie Nelson's lyrics of Crazy, which is like my favorite Willie Nelson song, just absolute, like, I remember I was sleeping on the bed, the pull-out couch, and I just started crying, and it was amazing because it was so beautiful. And so I ended up finding someone who had posted it on YouTube and ripping the audio and editing it to just that version. And apparently Neil Young actually released that song, like, released that recording on an album that was exclusive, I think, to vinyl or something. Or I think it's just exclusive to Third Man, of a bunch of collections of covers that he had done inside that booth. And I've been trying to track it down. I don't remember what it's called. I know it exists. So I just told myself, you know, the moment I track it down, I'm going to buy it. That's the first thing. I'm like, I don't care how much it costs, I'm going to buy it because it has that song on it, which is like hugely influential for me. So that's different kind of media because it's TV, but you know, and I've never been a big fan of Jimmy Fallon, but that whole just moment.
But you're a white guy.
Oh yeah, you're right. I'm white. But yeah, like just that whole moment was just incredible for me, and it really resonated with me. So that would probably be my second option. That's my second thing.
It's such a hard answer for me. These questions are difficult because for me, media and music it's a whole, you know?
Right. I totally understand. I wrote the questions.
Yeah.
They came to me, and they came to me because media is such a big influence in who I am.
It's a whole, and that's a whole with a W.
Right.
And to pick a piece of that whole is to take apart that whole. I think all media is influential in one way or another. People say, you know, oh, I hate that song, or I hated that movie. And I ask them why, and I'm like, well, it made me so angry. And I say, well, it's doing its job then. That's what media is about. It's about evoking emotion. It's about getting you to feel something. And if it makes you feel angry, then it's done its job. So you may hate it, but you can't say it's bad. So I don't know. For me to pick something out like that, you know, I can probably think of a few examples. Collective Soul, for example, has really influenced me. I think that the music he writes is very deep. The music itself is pretty straightforward, you know, as far as rock and roll goes, there's not a lot to it. I love it, they're my favorite band, but I think mostly because I respect him as a musician. And he's a single father, he's Christian, you know, he loves his family and he loves people and he loves his fans. And seeing that, and the way that he writes his music around that, I think is very, very admirable. And so I very much support him and his band. But I don't know, it just resonated with me at a young age. His music did. It was, like I said, it was one of the first bands, first CDs that I ever owned. First bands that I listened to outside of, you know, Creedence. And so I don't know, it's just kind of stuck with me. Everything that he's ever put out, I think, is fantastic. So I would, you know, I could point to that. But again, as a whole, media is just so... I don't know. It's overarching. It's music and movies and TV, probably especially music, though. Obviously, I have an affinity for it. But it's so much more than just a form of entertainment. It's a form of expressing what's in your soul. And so to try and pick a piece of that is just... I can't do that.
Very cool. Well, tell us about your passion and why you do it.
Oh, I wonder what your passion is.
I really, really like construction.
Big into interpretive dance.
Yeah. Obviously, audio is my passion. There's just, like I was talking a little bit about it before, there's something about using science to help create art that is just fascinating to me. It speaks to my soul, and that sounds silly, but it really does. Being the fifth Beatle, as it were, you know, being a member of the band, whether the band knows it or not, I am.
Oh, and the Cold Year recognizes Jason as another member of the band because things wouldn't have happened if it weren't for him. Mm-hmm. Like certain things would never have come to fruition if it weren't for Jason. So he definitely influenced the album, you know, and he may not be playing a traditional instrument, but the album would sound like this if it weren't for him. So,
and that's what I love about it is taking those things, like, you know, knowing where frequencies are and where they sound good and where they don't, and being able to mix those together and make them to sing with each other, you know, to make them meld and blend. That's something that I can do in a choir. You know, I can blend my voice with the guy next to me, but I've never played guitar well. I've never played the drums well, though I've taken lessons in both. Never done either one or singing well enough to be professional at it, but I always knew I wanted to be in music. I always knew that I loved science. And so the kind of funny thing is I actually started out doing mechanical engineering because I love physics and I love the idea of creating things. And I started along my path with engineering, and I thought to myself, this just doesn't feel right. You know, there's something missing. I don't love math. I love using it and applying it, but I don't love taking it.
Yep.
And so I'm like, I don't know if I can go through 3 years of calculus to become an engineer. I just don't know if I can handle that. And I sat down one day and I was thinking to myself, I'm like, well, how do I take my two passions? I love science and physics and I love music. How do I make those two things happen together? And until then, I'd never really known what audio even was. You know, I didn't even really know it was a thing. I thought they were the weird dramatic techies that wore black in high school. You know, that wasn't me. I sat down with my counselor one day and he's like, well, you could be an electrical engineer and design like speakers. Like, yeah, that's closer. What if I was like an architectural engineer and designed amphitheaters? That's closer. It's still not quite there. Then I remember I sat down in a class with Arlen, the Audio Essentials class, and he opened his mouth. And literally within 5 seconds of him speaking, I said, holy crap, this is it. This is what I want to do. This is the rest of my life. This is everything to me. And I knew it. It hit me like a bolt of lightning. I've never had that experience before since. And I can't get enough of it. I love music so much. I'm not good at it.
See, and that's...
Taking it and making it work for me is it's a blast. I disagree with
that, because good at it is a weird thing to say, because the science behind... Because I'm kind of the opposite, you know? I got into music because I like storytelling and because I like chords and melodies and how things like that are performed, but I don't have... I don't pay a lot of attention to the science, you know, like what frequency sounds good. And it wasn't until I met Jason where I started to actually think about things like that, you know, like why an EQ on your amp is important. You know, up until then I was just playing an acoustic guitar. And so, you know, very good at that side of music, but it's like two halves of a whole, you know, music is...
Little does he know I BS my way through everything.
Yeah, you know, little do you know I do too. So, we're both BSing everything, so...
Well, that's interesting, because when I took Audio Essentials, it was after a 10-year hiatus from school. I had wanted to be an animator since I was probably 5 years old. And then I graduated right when the economy had crashed, and I didn't want to move to California. And I was unemployed, and I'm like, okay, I can go back to school. I went back to school to get a bachelor's degree on top of my associate degree. And that was like one of the... I didn't have to take any of the other essentials classes because I had taken classes that counted for them, but that audio essentials class just clicked with me. Mm-hmm. I didn't study for the class at all. Just everything made sense. The only studying was like just to get dates down here and there for a quiz or whatnot. But yeah, it just clicked. And all the other animators hated me because they hated that class because they just didn't get it. And I'm like, but.
Well, you see, this is maybe a personal story that you can attribute to one of your other questions. But I've my entire life, and this is something that I haven't told a lot of people, I've always felt that I was adequate at a lot of things. But I've never been really, really good at anything.
Yeah.
And it was really depressing for me. I actually really struggled with this, like in junior high and high school, and even on my mission, like just the idea that I would never be really good at something, you know, like I'm okay at a lot of things. And so when I found audio and, you know, it took me a little while, obviously, and there was some struggling that I did with that as well. You know, I'm not very good at this, you know, maybe I shouldn't try it. Maybe I shouldn't keep doing it. But after a while, it just started clicking for me, and it just started making sense, and people started coming up to me after shows and saying, that's the best it's ever sounded for me. And my thought is, well, who's your audio engineer? Right. Like, it's not rocket science. You turn it up until they say stop, and then you leave it there, you know? It's like, it's not that hard, but for some reason, it makes sense, and I'm good at it. And so, I don't know, for me, that's a really, really important thing in my life. Is to know that I'm actually really good at something.
I still don't feel I'm really good at anything. I'm a struggling artist. I'm a struggling audio guy.
Obviously, there's always moments of self-doubt, but...
It's not so much self-doubt, it's just that...
Self-doubt? What's that?
You're like, I live two levels below
I'm
that,
really
bro.
Good at guitar. Said no one ever. Well, said no one important ever, I guess. There are probably guys out there who think they're the best guitarist ever, but I don't think so.
So what about you, Matt?
What was the question?
What's your passion and why do you do it?
My Humps by Fergie. Very passionate about that song. And then the later re-recording and remix by Alanis Morissette. That was also great.
You know, I heard that song in high school, and I thought it was, like, the worst thing in the world. I thought it
what?
Was so evil.
That's terrible. That song is an American treasure. How dare you?
You're an American treasure, Matt.
Yeah, no. My passion... Well, so, of course, my passion is music, but my passion...
Really?
Oh. My passion overall is making interesting music, making music that you wouldn't hear often. Yeah, and he's holding up Praise the Goat. Because the thing is I'm one of those people that when I love something, I'm not afraid to criticize it, you know, because I want that thing to become great, you know, or greater, I mean. I love music, but I am not afraid to say this song is this. You know, I criticize my favorite bands. I criticize bands I love. I criticize, and this is one thing that I see a lot is just bands are okay with riding that line of mediocrity. You know, just being like, oh yeah, I know how to play four chords on my guitar. I'll write a song about the mountains because I live in Utah, and that's all fine and good, and that's great. I'm glad you're making music, and that makes me happy that people want to make music, but you need to look inside and find something fresh and new. So I really, my passion is fresh, original, deliberate music. I mean, one of my favorite bands is Hiatus Coyote, which I tell a lot of people, and most, you know, people who actually know who they are oftentimes say, really? Because you would think that a band like that would influence my music. And like I said earlier, they do, but I'm so bad at it that it doesn't actually sound all that close to it. So that's kind of that's kind of the way I look at it. And so like, I love going to local shows, and I love listening to new and fresh bands, because when I hear a great band get up on stage and play, it's incredibly refreshing for me, because it's like fresh water being splashed on my face, because I get so bogged down by hearing the same bands using the same chord progressions, the same lyrics, the same, you know,
you basically do the same song over and over again every day.
Yeah, but like instead of an A minor and then a C and then a G, they go G C A minor or A minor G C or C G, you know, and they're just playing the same three chords but in different options. What I want to do is I want to take those and I want to throw something into them that's completely different. The Cold Year has a song that's A minor, let's see, it's A minor G F sharp minor, which is a very basic chord progression, but we play it in a specific way that makes it sound fresh and interesting and unique while still remaining standard. You know, we're not experimental. We're not making weird noises on our guitars. We're still playing chords
melody. Well, that's up for debate.
Yeah. We're still playing chords and melodies and stuff, but in a different way. We're structuring it interesting. Like today I was literally playing my guitar when Jason came over, and I was playing it's a G sharp minor seventh flat five chord. So I removed the third.
We were talking about his pretension earlier.
And yeah. I removed one of the notes from it, and it made it sound so weird and interesting, and I loved it. And so I threw it into one of my songs, and I fell in love with it. Even though my girlfriend was sitting on the couch, she's like, "Ugh, that chord sounds weird." And I was like, "I know, I love it." And so that song, that chord's going to be in a song now, because I love the way it sounds and how off it is. But at the same time, it still sounds good in context. So that's my passion. My passion is weird and original yet accessible music. So
awesome, Matt. What makes you tick?
My humps by sorry. I wake up every morning looking forward to sitting down and writing or playing. The band, the Cold Year, is on a bit of a hiatus right now because of our drummer had a baby. And so we're on a bit of a hiatus, and it's driving me insane. And I thought, like, oh yeah, we could take 2 months off. But I'm going nuts. I'm going crazy. So I'm writing a ton, which is good. But at the same time, I have become so close with the bassist and Columbia, our drummer, that it's difficult for me to write music without having them there to give me input. You know, usually I just write like a chunk of a chord progression and then an semblance of some lyrics. And then I take it to them and I say, hey, check this out. And then they'll be like, oh, what if we did this and this and this? And then I'm like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. So then I take it home and I finish it. Not having that is really hard for me.
He'll text me at like 3 a.m. Are you awake? Are you awake?
Yeah.
I'm bored.
It's a musical booty
call. Can you come over?
It's a musical booty call. So that's probably what makes me tick is my, because I'm never happy with where I'm at as a musician. I am one of those people that needs to constantly be moving forward to be happy. I'm not happy with staying in the same place. And like, one thing that I'm so scared of, and I know it won't happen, but I still stress out about it, is if one of the songs off Praise the Goat or the next album becomes a one-hit wonder, and we tour all over the world, and the only song people want to hear is that one song, because Jason can attest to this, I hate, and I refuse to listen to my EP, my original EP when I was a solo singer-songwriter, because I've moved past that. And so I feel like when I listen to it, I feel like I'm moving backwards. And I don't like that feeling. And I'll probably get to that point somewhere in Praise the Goat, where if one of the songs off Praise the Goat becomes famous, if, crossing my fingers, and then we play a song, play a set of our new music, and someone says, hey, play the Guillotine. I'll do it because, you know, of course, that our fans are the reason why we do this, but at the same time, I won't feel super great about it. You know, I want to move forward, and I want to become the best guitarist in the world, and I want to become the best lyricist in the world, and I want
to
be the best
singer. He wants to catch them all.
Singer. I literally want to catch them all. But so I try to convince myself that that's possible. And so that's kind of what makes me tick, is taking on a new day, trying to be better than I was yesterday.
Fantastic. Jason, what makes you tick?
You know, right now, I'm in a place in my life where I finally feel like I've found some semblance of a niche. Some semblance of a place where I fit.
Nietzsche.
Yeah. I love what I do. I love audio. I have a full-time job, and it's a job. You know, it pays the bills. But I finally feel like I'm moving forward in my life. I have a wife, and I have amazing 10-month-old twin girls that are fantastic. And so what drives me right now is finding some sort of way to provide for my family and to make them happy while still being happy myself. And so I'm really trying to move toward not necessarily doing audio full-time. It's something I've considered doing as a freelance engineer. That alone, I don't think is really what I'm looking for. I think what's making me move forward right now is just the idea that I can do what I enjoy, and I can make money doing it, and I can go home to my family and I can look them in the eye and know that I am doing everything I can to help them. But at the same time, that I'm loving the heck out of it at the same time. You know, not a lot of people can say that. And I finally feel like I'm getting there. So right now, that's kind of what's motivating me to get out of bed in the morning. Is just that idea that I can actually enjoy my life.
Excellent. All right. Well, if people want to get a hold of your work or contact you, hire you, how can they get a hold of you? See what you do.
I'm on Facebook. I mean, you can look me up personally, Jason Knoll, or you can look up H2 Audio. That's my company's name, and you can hire me there. I'm available for recording, producing, mixing, mastering, live sound, really anything audio. I also do post-production. I've been doing a lot of videos for some corporations lately, commercial spots and things like that. So anything you can think of that's audio related, I do it. So definitely if you're looking for something for that, you know, look me up on Facebook. That's probably the best way to get hold of me right now.
All right. Matt?
You can check out my band, The Cold Year, thecoldyear.com. All of our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Bandcamp is all there. You can pick up our EP, live at KRCL, which is a live EP, or you can pick up the full-length album, Praise the Goat, there. Also sign up for our mailing list, and we send, for everyone who signs up for our mailing list, we send another secondary EP that we recorded that's really cool.
He can also be found on various street corners at odd times of the night.
Yeah. Farmersonly.com. I've already told that joke. That's funny the second time. You can always draw an upside down star in blood, and I will appear. Yeah.
Gotta say your name 3 times backward.
Yeah, say my name 3 times in the mirror, and I appear behind you.
All right. Well, since you guys worked together on this album, if we wanted to share a song to go along with this interview, which one should we play?
Well,
kind of as a lead out, or
yeah,
we can do O'Eve.
O'Eve or SOS?
I'd say O'Eve.
Okay, yeah, O'Eve is good.
Okay,
let me preface this.
Sure.
This song, and you can choose whether or not to include this. This song is very interesting because it's about something that's very, very, let's just say it's an important topic to Matt. It's also an important topic to me, even though I disagree with it completely.
It's a little contentious.
But it is a little contentious because it's basically anti-religion, and I'm very religious.
But in the sense of asking questions, it's not like I hate religion. Religions are evil. They're ruining the world. It's not that. It's have you ever seen this? You know, it's asking.
Have you ever examined yourself?
Yeah, it's asking.
And that I agree with. So I think it's a very, very interesting song that we have helped each other build, and obviously he did most of the work, but that we've worked together on, because we come from so far opposite viewpoints of it, but that we can come together on that one viewpoint.
I wouldn't necessarily say it's anti-religion. It's mostly my views on religion.
Right.
You know, why I am not religious.
From the surface, it could be seen that way.
Yes, yes, yes. Like, it was reviewed by a local magazine. I won't mention their name. But he basically said that he didn't like the song because it was vaguely anti-religious. And I had to explain to him, it's not. It's my viewpoints, you know, on this. So, but...
All right.
Have you ever seen a talking snake? Have you ever seen a bush of flame? Have you ever had forbidden fruit? Has God ever spoken here? Have you ever read your Bible now? Have you ever had to preach out loud? Have you ever had to lay it all? You're the one left out to some forbidden fruit. Has God ever spoken to you? Blasphemy, and I'm loving all this freedom that I rain. Have you ever had forbidden fruit? Has God ever spoken to you? Has God ever spoken to you? Has God ever spoken to you?
I really like his voice.
Yeah. I enjoy that album a lot. So they played the few songs for me when they came on the podcast. And then I sat down and listened to the whole album the next day. And I was like, the whole time I was like texting Jason going, oh my gosh, this is so cool. Just about the different audio techniques and stuff that he did. And it's really cool. Like if you listen on a surround sound system,
uh-huh.
It's a stereo album. But you, do you know what ProLogic 2 is?
I do.
You can either encode something in ProLogic 2 and get a 5.1 playback out of it. Or if it's just a stereo thing, it'll look for stuff in it, and it has an algorithm for picking what to put in the rear speakers.
Oh, cool.
I was listening to it on my surround sound system, and on the first track, it starts with
Hades?
Yeah. It starts with a cylinder record that they recorded.
Uh-huh.
And on the surround sound system, that cylinder record is mono, and it comes only out of the front speaker, the front center speaker. And then when the rest of the song comes in, it's like, boom, full blown, all the speakers.
Have they got to hear it in surround yet?
I don't know. I texted Jason about it, because that just sounded amazing.
That's
to me.
That's wicked.
It was really cool. I mean, I'm sure he has some inkling that it did that. I'm sure the way that he encoded it.
Bruce Wayne was also thanked here. I wonder if that's the Bruce Wayne or just a Bruce Wayne.
Probably the Bruce Wayne, knowing Matthew.
Cool.
So yeah, but there's also like on Nashville's Full, there's like all this... There's like this ambient like stuff going on. Like you can, it's just somebody kind of living in like an apartment or something. You just kind of hear him shuffling around in drawers and sitting down.
That's interesting.
And eating at the table and that kind of stuff. On the surround sounds, or no, was it on the surround? No, it was on my headphones. I was listening to that on my headphones. And that was very binaural. It sounds very 3D surround sound when you're listening on headphones, which I love that kind of stuff. So
yeah, you're kind of geeky about that.
I'm super geeky about that, and I'm fully aware of it. Okay, so you sent a song to me that you wanted to share.
Yeah.
Tell me a little about
it. So it's from this band from the 90s called Jellyfish. And the song's Ignorance is Bliss. It's just this kind of poppy little number. And if you listen close to the lyrics, it's all about Super Mario Brothers. And the video is fun to watch.
Yeah, we'll put a link to that because I'm not sure I can get away with playing the whole thing on
Probably
the podcast.
Probably can't.
But I will put a link so everybody can...
Go check it out.
Pause, go listen to this, and then I dig Jellyfish.
I went through a phase where that's all I listened to was all this power pop stuff.
Like okay, yeah.
Jellyfish and Mike Viola and... Materialization and that stuff.
Mike's been, Mike Wisland, he's been on this huge power pop
kick lately. It's so fun.
And he like gave me this album to listen to that's like, it's a box set that's like British power pop.
Oh, cool.
And like,
I'd like to hear
he's
that.
Like, you gotta listen to this. And I listened to it and like, there were maybe three bands on the whole thing that I'd even heard of. And not that I was familiar with them. I'd heard their name at some point. But yeah, he's really been into that stuff lately, so.
That's cool.
It's been fun. When he gets into stuff, he exposes me to it.
And he goes deep, too.
He does. Thanks, Pat, for coming down.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Co-hosting the show. It's been really fun talking to you. I get a kick out of doing this. It's always fun to hear different people's thoughts and stuff.
Thanks for inviting me. It's fun to do it.
All right. And if you have any messages for us, if you want to send us an email, well, we're at pleasepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter, and the website is pleaseleavemessage.com.